December 11, 2022. It's a lot for Pedro show. We'll be right back. Watt for Pedro show. Happy Sunday. Started off the show with John Coltrane with Miles Davis at the Newport Jazz Festival 1958 doing Alucha. I think that's a Charlie Parker tune. Maybe. Then we had Savage Republic with Nothing at All because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention. I got with me Brother Ethan Port. Welcome aboard, Ethan.
Hey. Hey there, Mike.
Yeah, we're making it up. We're supposed to do this a little earlier, but like Mr. Wells learned us, no wine before it's time. Ethan, please bring me your earliest musical recollection, please.
My earliest musical recollection?
Yeah, there's an echo in here.
Earliest musical recollection. I don't know. I mean, I say...
Remember, it's a Watt for Pedro show. There's no hard questions. There's no wrong answers.
It's got to be the Beatles because, you know, that's my parents always played the Beatles. So it's probably one of my first memories.
Okay. In this pad you grew up in, did you have musical instruments?
Not really. No.
Okay,
well,
let me ask you this. What was the first record you bought?
My first musical instruments was I did play the pots and pans, you know?
Okay, so your pad did have pots and pans, and you repurposed them for drums.
That's right.
You know who else started out that way? Pontiac, Michigan, Elvin Jones. And then his sister helped him get some money with his paper route to get a real drum set. But what was the first record you bought with your own money, Ethan?
First record I bought with my own money was, first record I got was, either Cheech and Chong or Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Comedy records. All right. Were you a Dr. Demento fan on Sundays, Cammy T?
Oh, yeah. Every weekend. Yeah.
What about the first gig you saw, Ethan?
The first gig I saw, man, you're testing my memory? I'm an old man.
Yeah, but everybody's got a different path, and one of those ways to determine that different path was your experiences, and that's why I'm asking you this.
Right. All right. So, actually, the first rock concert I went to was at the Santa Monica Pier. There was like a free festival, and it was like all these rock bands. But I think the first, right around that same time, my friend got tickets to Foghat at the Forum.
I saw Foghat. I saw Savoy Brown, too. Some of the guys were in that band. Let me ask you this. In school, were you in the marching band or the choir or shit like that?
I took a choir class, but no, I wasn't like in the middle. I went to these small alternative schools, so we didn't have any of that stuff.
That's why I asked the question, because some schools totally got rid of their arts programs.
Yeah.
That's why Flea opened up his Silver Lake Conservatory of Music. He went back to Fairfax High, and they had gotten rid of the music program where he learned trumpet.
Right.
Yeah, fucked up. Okay, so, you know the thing after school, not graduating, but in the afternoon, bedroom band, basement band, garage band. Did you get into that stuff?
Yeah, so in high school... So I took guitar lessons when I was in fifth grade.
Okay, how'd that happen?
They just had a class at my elementary school, so that's like, you know, grabbed me, you know? Like, I'm playing guitar, and I thought that was cool.
Now, did you use one of theirs, or did you get your own guitar?
Oh, I got one, yeah.
And what was it? Was it acoustic?
Yeah, it was in with the nylon strings. Yeah.
It seems like everybody's fucking first guitar is a nylon string Spanish style acoustic.
Yeah.
But then the records we're listening to don't sound like that, so it's such a freak out. I remember. Anyway.
Well, that was the thing. I didn't have any voice. You know, I was copying other people's songs, and I was learning.
Yeah, but that's the way things were in those days. Yeah, you copied off records,
music,
right?
Theory.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then,
well, let me ask you about the experience of taking guitar lessons, and they were at the school, right?
Well, first was at the school. That was fine, you know. That was like playing chords and stuff. And but then I had a teacher, so my parents bought me private lessons.
And how'd that go?
That was cool. She was a good teacher, but it was like folk and classical music, you know, and I saw, so I played the songs, but it didn't really grab me, you know.
Let me ask you this. I'm curious. Did you get the feeling like you just wanted to bring in records you like and say, hey, will you teach me these songs?
Yeah, well, I did that a couple. There was a couple songs that we learned.
Okay.
It wasn't her fault.
I understand, but, you know, yeah, proclivity.
I didn't understand music. It's like my parents, you know, what they liked and what they were listening to, that's what I was exposed to. And then at school, we just didn't really, you know, like I was listening to these, like, funny comedy records. And the thing is, like, in that time, rock and roll was, like, the big stadium bands, you know?
Yeah, right, arena rock, yeah.
And even the Beatles, it's like we were just saturated with it. It's like I just didn't, it didn't speak to me, you know? I didn't want to be, you couldn't feel connected to those artists, you know? They were so far removed. Like
Mount Olympus.
To a little kid, they're like these Olympian gods. And it's like, right. All right, well, I'm never...
Ethan, I think I relate to you because we didn't know about club culture. You couldn't go into little pads.
Right. It's like I didn't have a toehold.
You know, when I think back on the movement, that's really what it was about, just getting music in venues small enough where you could see that bass guitars actually had bigger strings.
Right. Well, that's exactly it. So
people don't understand that if your only experience with music was guys that were like an eighth of an inch high.
Yeah. Like, I couldn't even imagine playing. I didn't know, like, how the sound was made and what it was. And so, because that was a big change for me. Then I got some friends in high school, you know, that were into this, like, the punk rock stuff and were going to shows. And that just, like, opened my mind. Oh, actually, I saw Throbbing Gristle, right? They played in
Culver City, right? They blew up the PA in the first tune.
I saw that, and I'm just like, fuck. Yeah, this is what I want to do.
Genesis on bass, I remember.
Right. So, you know, I had like cassette recorders. I could make noise. That's when I started doing it.
You started home recording. Okay. That's happening.
Yeah. And you could turn off the erase thing on the tape recorder and you could multi-track on the cassette tape.
Yeah.
I was just doing stuff like that, but the scene, that's where I met people and we'd start doing stuff.
So it wasn't really school. I mean, there were some dudes at school, but it was mainly going to the gigs.
No, I had one friend at school, this guy Bob Waller. You probably know him.
Oh, yeah, I remember Bob Waller.
In Slivers.
Sure.
With Greg.
You know, we lost him a couple weeks ago.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh, he lived rough.
I didn't hear about that.
And who else was in that band? Martin Tamburvich.
Right.
We lost him about 15, 16 years ago.
So I went down. That was your rehearsal studio where they practiced, right? I went down there.
Well, that wasn't mine. They had that old shoe shop there on. It was only like a couple blocks from where Charles Bukowski lived his last 14 years.
Oh, okay. Anyways, I went down there like once or twice with Bob. They recorded that. They recorded a single.
Right. On New Alliance Records with Martin Tamburvich, myself, and Dee Boone's label.
Right. Yeah, he was only like 16, but Bob was a big mess, so I think he's dead.
That's true.
A long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah, but was that one of your first kind of musical adventures?
Yeah, because he knew everything. Like, he was like a teacher, you know?
Right.
He listened to everything, and he explained things, and he'd tell me, like, oh, there's this band, SPK, check this out.
I remember them.
So I was volunteering at KCRW.
I think they were Australians, right?
Right. I was volunteering at KCRW, and we would go there on the Saturday morning. There was a punk rock show that the Ruth Hirschman, the general manager.
Ruth Hirschman. She didn't do it, right?
Her son had this punk rock show early in the morning on Saturdays. And, like, we would go and hang out. And he died from a brain tumor, right young. He was young. Because he wasn't much older than us, I don't think.
Yeah.
So, but we would go down there and... that's before it was like a big NPR station.
I remember.
Rock station in the morning and no one would notice.
I remember.
So that was cool. So Bob would bring all his records and then we'd go through the records they had at the station.
You were on the west side there. So there was Rhino, right? You must have went to Rhino and Nels Klein worked there for 8 or 9 years.
Yeah. Rhino Records was the big one.
Thank you. Bet a ketchup bottle, it squirts where you aim it.
Mrs. Porter, I've got the next best thing.
Sort of feels different too, doesn't it?
Go ahead, pop it.
Might even sound strong.
I had been on a talk show at one time, and I don't know if they should really call them talk shows. I think they should call them, oh, shut up shows. There's always someone on there. I mean, I don't really care if Florence Henderson is in New York for 3 days, or when she's going back to Rome, or anything like that. I'd much rather hear them get somebody off the street who just saw a spaceship and a urinal and can prove it. That would be information.
upholstery, hissing snide remarks, one after the other. I was sick of listening and left, walked to the woods where dappled light refracts through the leaves onto the water, balms my weary face, read to locate the pain in parts of my body. Picked a few off-white flowers hiding under a clump. I guessed they answered yes. Swallowed them down in one, drank from the stream, went home. The intruder had departed, and the stains on the couch were easy enough to remove.
For Pedro Show, that chunk of music started with Savage Republic doing Let It Ride. Then we had Boris off their new album Fade. This is Chapter 4, Marine Snow. Second language, right? Okay, Melvinator. Eric Melvin has got a new proj, Solo Man. I guess NOFX is going to break up. And this is American Errorist. Eric Melvin. Dig that guy. Good people. Crash Skrigger with Phone Grab Practicing. Spotsky, my old buddy Spot up in Sheboygan. And the winning horse is Grody Cone Horns Blow Dead Mother's Diaphragm Pioglitazone Dust Mope. Is that a fucking title or what? That's Rubber O Cement from up in East Bay. Bombas Prendon after that with Total Failure Part 2. No, Fair Rule. It's not failure. I wonder if they spelled that wrong. Fair Rule. Okay. Bull Shannon. This has got Chris Canny. Cuz, his new band. Chutto Ghetto, I think, is gone now. Andy Livingston, half of Mold Omen out of Baltimore with Blight Eyes, not Bright Eyes, people. It ain't no Asian mispronunciation. Hidden Forces Trio with Raul Cantizano out of España, huh? With a Patope. Old buddy Howie Reeves on this. And Marco Sorato on bass, great bass man. Finally, Savage Republic with Stingray. You know, I had Bruce on the show about a year ago, right, Ethan?
Oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah, it was. Oh, it was very cool.
That song, Let It Ride, that was a Death Ride 69 song, right?
Ethan, I wrote you about like this. Now, you did hit me to the last two, like Rock and Roll, Rock and Roll, Red Sea and Mescalina. Those are Death Ride 69. But, okay, right. I'll correct the playlist. I want to get the shit right. Okay. I didn't know, but I had a suspicion on the other two because I remember when they were released. Anyway, so what happens? You're going to gigs. You're going to club gigs. You're finding people there. You've learned some guitar. I asked about the bedroom band, basement band. Does that come around?
Yeah, well, so just at the end of high school, we put together a talent show band, you know, to play. So my friend on saxophone, and we did like a B.B. King song, I think, or something like that. So that's like the first time I think I finally got a band together, and I'm like, oh, shit.
Now, did you do the lead guitar? Did you do B.B.'s part?
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah. Well, if you're going to pick a lead guitarist, man, it's either Jimmy or B.B.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or, Zoot Horn Rolo. but that's interesting. So you would say that success was a gig. Did this band have a name?
Yeah, but I don't remember.
That's okay. And so you broke the water, man. What happened after that?
So I graduated early. I went to UCLA, and then at UCLA, everything opened up.
Oh, that's where you met Bruce?
That was like, you know, 82 when I started at UCLA.
Yeah, so because Bruce was telling me about some kind of tunnel or something that he started recording in near there.
Right. So that's when I would see Bruce and Phil Drucker and Mark Erskine especially, I would talk to a lot.
What about the urinal guys? Because they were going to school there too.
Yeah, Kevin and his friends.
Kevin on drum. Well, later, they didn't play anything at first, right? They make the band when they learn how to play. And right. Kel.
Yeah, so I would see Kel, but I would see, and John worked at the student union, so I would see him.
You know what? I think he worked there after school. I think he worked there for like 50 years.
That was his career. Yeah,
he's living in the desert now. Yeah, he retired. I love that guy.
So I would see all the guys.
Urinals were a huge band of the Minutemen, I just got to tell you.
Oh, yeah. They're amazing.
Okay, so you meet these other guys at college, right, that are doing adventurous music.
Right, so then I was more like, you know, so I was just crazy from Throbbing Gristle. I was like, how do you make this noise? You know, how do you make these soundscapes and stuff?
Did you get the records? You get the final, second and final report, annual?
Oh,
report?
I get everything. Yeah, yeah. And at Rhino, it all came out. Rhino had this importer. They would get the stuff. Somebody, they had a really good buyer, and the stuff would always show up there.
But we had the South Bay with Zed of London, Mike Zed and his ma, and they had the same kind of thing. Because I think they had a pipeline before the movement. They were getting like the hippie, spacey records.
Right.
So when the movement came, they were just plugged in. Yeah.
Yeah, so like right when the stuff would come out, like every...
There was another pad, too. There was a pad in Pasadena, Poobahs.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
So we were getting almost, you know, everything. We knew what was going on, and then the zines and shows,
right.
Like KPFK and
KPFK was beautiful. Did you used to listen to Imaginary Landscape with Carl Stone and Tesseract?
So from working at KCRW, so to get out of high school early, I did a bunch of volunteer work at KCRW, and I met this guy David Cloud, and he was friends with Carl Stone. And
I think he lives in Tokyo now. He teaches at a college here. Yeah.
Right. There was a geography. He worked in the geography department in the maps library. This guy, Carlos Hagen, he would do these shows on KCRW and KPFK. They came from like the old, like late 60s, 70s hippie KPFK group. And there was some shakeup there.
Right.
Where they all left KPFK.
Yeah.
And then a lot of them were doing specials on KCRW through Ruth Hirschman.
Yeah.
And that was Carlos Hagen. And he would do these specials on like whatever topic, like, but he would give me cassettes with like Popol Vuh and Amandul and Universe Zero.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
He helped like connect all the dots.
Sure.
A lot of that stuff.
That's so important, man. People ask me about the old days. I said, it's about people. So are the new days.
Right. Yeah, he would have these salons at his house in Malibu.
Well, you know, Michael was actually from the hill here, from Palos Verdes, but his family disowned him and shit.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. He had a band that played the other mask. I saw him once. It was called Strict IDs or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, so you got turned on by all this stuff. There was a weird kind of connect between that kind of late 60s, hip, early 70s hippie stuff and some of the underground of our movement, huh?
Well, for us, for sure. So, I mean, like Hawkwind and sure. and then all the sound, like the cinematic soundscape stuff. So when I found yeah. that, when I met Bruce and I saw that these guys were doing like the kind of like the Greek music and the ethnic music, I started out into folk and ethnic music. Like, I didn't understand rock and roll. It didn't make sense to me for some reason.
Kip Yifte had that cat at lunchtime named Mario, and he played all this world music. Yeah.
The guy in that band I told you about that did the B.B. King song, Christy Francesco, his mom dated that guy Mario.
Okay. Because he
so I would go over to his house, and Mario, you know, was hanging out, and
he had 10 million fucking different kinds of music. It was beautiful.
Right.
Man.
Yeah. And he would put on like dance concerts at KPFK.
Yeah. That's Mario Cassetta. I think his name was Mario Cassetta.
Mario Cassetta. Right. Yeah. So that community, like there's like you were talking about, like that community that was accessible. Like, okay, I can do that. I can play this music. And then you're right. The club scene made that accessible. And
right.
then. And cassettes, you know, we could record stuff, and it sounded shitty. All the kids seem to like cassettes now. But
the ethnic thing, so is this how you and Bruce get turned on to the Arabic?
Well, see, I was always into it, yeah, from a young age. Like, I was always more into that. So when I met Bruce and those guys and I heard what they were doing, I was like, oh, yeah, that's cool. That's my deal. So, no, Bruce, those guys were older than me, right? Bruce is
right.
like, they're
yeah.
all like 8 to 9 years older than me. So they... A lot of them had already finished UCLA when I got there. Like, they were finishing up. Like, I met Bruce probably my first – I was still 17, and Bruce was there finishing up his art program. And Kevin and Robert Lovelace, you know, I would see them around campus, but that was only, like, the first year or two because they were all on their way out.
Right, right.
But they were – but I found a sub-basement. It's like the basement of the basement in the physics building, because I was a math and physics guy. So I was always hanging out there.
Uh-huh.
And there was this floor underneath the physics building in Kinsey, and it had been like scheduled for earthquake retrofitting. So a lot of the offices were empty. So it was abandoned. There was like this entire floor was empty, and it was full of like equipment and crap, and it was this giant reverb chamber. So I would put flyers up around campus trying to find anybody to play with, and we'd go down there and we'd jam.
That would be the venue.
Yeah, that's when Brad Lehner was doing stuff with us.
Oh, I remember Brad.
Brad was in like 1,000 bands, and he's really creative.
He's got his little brother into it, right? He's like 8 or 9 or something.
And I met Greg Grunke. So Greg Grunke and I were starting to do music together.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
Ethan, hold that thought, because we're at the end of the first hour, December 11, 2022, at Dishwap Pedo Show. Special guest, Ethan Port. Hold tight for hour two. December 11, 2022. It's the second hour of the Watch for Pedro Show. Hot for Pedro show. We start off the second hour with Savage Republic. Hopefully it's not Death Ride 6. Or if it is, it is. There's no problem with White getting corrected. No problem. Unprecedented. Is this Savage Republic?
Yeah, but that was written by Graham Lewis from Wire for us.
Wow! I got to do a collab with Graham Lewis a couple years ago. Man, that was another big band with the Minutemen. That's where we got the whole idea for Little Songs, Pink Flag. Right. Anyway, Unprecedented. You know, it does sound like an England guy would write. Unprecedented.
Yeah, the list about him almost dying of COVID. He wrote that when he came out of his coma, I think.
Oh, wow.
I don't know the details.
Okay. Then Pedro de Toulon. This is a piece that me and two of my trios, Second Men, Missing Men, did with El Sueño de Mayo, European trio I'm in, with these guys from Toulon, France, called High Five Club. So it's collaboration. And Stefano Pelia wrote them. Our piece, we recorded it all while we were recording the El Sueño de Mayo Terzo album. And then they played on it over there in Toulon, France. It's like the big Navy town in France. Okay, Savage Republican after that with Tablo Rasa. What's wrong with you? What? Tablo Rasa. So continue with your story of the early Ethan Port at UCLA music scene.
Right. So I was like, you know, finding whoever to do music with. It was very experimental. And the art department at UCLA was really experimental, too. There was a lot of weird performance art and just weird shit everywhere. And so I met Bruce and those guys, and I heard what they were doing, and I started going to their shows, and that was cool. So I invited Bruce to come play with us down in the sub-basement. So there's a couple times Bruce joined us, and Greg and I were would basically compose more of the songs, and then everybody else would kind of, like, jam along. So that's where that Carlos Hagen was giving me the tapes of, like, Amandul and Popo Vuh and all, like, the collectives that lived on farms, you know?
Yeah, right.
He saw the connection.
I think the Noi guys still live on... No, the Faust guys. They live outside of Hamburg. They still live on a farm.
Right. But, no, we were just in a weird sub-basement of a...
But didn't Bruce find a place at UCLA where he was recording, like, a tunnel or some shit?
Yeah, so there's a bridge that got covered up by landfill between the music department and this other building. And there's like a road that goes over it. So it's actually a bridge that's completely buried. And he got keys to the underground tunnel to do recording there as part of his independent project.
That's it.
That he did at UCLA through Chris Burton, I think, maybe might have been the advisor. So.
And Chris Burton, people, is a guy who nailed himself to a Volkswagen.
Right, had his friend shoot him in the arm. And,
yeah, get a cardboard box on the freeway.
Right. So we named our my later band.
You know what he ends up doing? At the end of his life, he's collecting light posts. They're all at LACMA now.
Right. Well, so my mom was building a house in Topanga Canyon. Yeah. And when we were pregnant, waiting for our kid, we lived in that house for a few months. And Chris Burton was the next door neighbor.
Like, oh, shit.
We could see him across the street. So I got like, so I was getting these stories from Chris. and Paul McCarthy.
That's right. And in fact, he had a band. He had a buddy. They were called Kipper Kids. Saw them a couple times. Georgie threw ketchup on. He grabbed a ketchup bottle out of one of their hands and started. They were like showing their dicks and shit and saying, feeling groovy with the flashlights. We were kind of barracho too. So, if my memory's right, Ethan, you guys weren't Savage Republic at first. You were Africa Core.
So that was Bruce and Phil and Jeff Long was in high school still.
Right, the basement.
And Mark. So it was the four of them. And on that first record, Tragic Figures, basically Phil wrote the first side of the record and Jeff wrote the other. I can't remember first or second which side it is, but. And then Jeff Long wrote the other side. So a lot of the vocal songs were Jeff and Phil. And it is basically like Phil on one side, Jeff on the other. And then. And they were Africa Core. I don't know why.
yes, but you never played with me. Yeah, me and D. Boone thought that was a weird name.
I would never be in a fucking band called Africa Corps. Like, what the fuck? Hi, I'm a Nazi, but I'm not really a Nazi. Maybe I'm a Nazi.
It's Halloween.
That was all that Joy Division.
Yeah, I know. Believe me.
Put a swastika on your arm.
I remember those good old days.
I'm Jewish. Like, I'm not going to be in a Nazi band. Yeah. I was already worried about the South Bay people coming to the shows. There was Nazis in the audience. Like, your band doesn't have to be a Nazi band.
There was some Hollywood ones, too.
I mean, maybe they're like, you know, I don't even see where it's tongue-in-cheek.
What happened? It's not tongue-in-cheek. Remember the guy, the who made some interesting music? He flipped out. Look, I want to play something I don't know anything about. Scanhas 23. You can hit me to it.
That's my new solo project.
Okay. And we'll be right back. Watch for Pedro show. That chunk of music to start off with a brand new project from Ethan called Scandass 23 Skidoo. Huh?
That's right. The White Thunderbolt Bikini.
Irrawaddy River of Spirits. And then we have the Oregons out of Ireland doing Bare Legs. And Savage Republic have that with Bedouin. So, yeah, let's get back to that weird name. So you never played with them under that name. You joined after they changed your name.
Yeah, they had already, in fact, when I met Bruce, I think they had already changed the name to Savage Republic. So Phil Drucker is Jewish, and his parents were paying for the record. And they said we're not going to pay for a record that's called After Court. So the first cover, Bruce couldn't use the name Africore, but I think he'd already printed the covers or something.
Yeah, and people, covers. you gotta so understand, why, Bruce Leitcher, he didn't have Stoughton print these things. He printed these things himself, and they were in
letterpress,
and they were like real heavy, bare cardboard, and they were really neat.
Right. Yeah, it was really cool. So Bruce printed stickers that said Savage Republic that he put over the cover because it couldn't be. And, oh, I think there are some covers where he did a block of black and like crossed out Africa Corps, and then he put a sticker over that said Savage Republic, and he got his friend.
And I think the guy on the cover is being assassinated or shot in a firing squad or something.
Right. That's a famous picture from Iran when the Shah.
Okay, that's when it was. Yeah.
So the thing about that shirt, I made shirts, right, of Savage Republic and that picture, and I was wearing it at the, we lived at the co-op housing at UCLA.
Yeah.
And I was at dinner one time, and this guy came up to me, one of the students that lived in the co-op with me, and he said, that guy who's on the, in the front with his arm bandaged.
Yeah.
He's in the very front of the photo.
Yeah.
It's like a Pulitzer Prize winning photo, right? And then
right.
Bruce did the kind of the block printing. It's harder to see the details of the photo, which is kind of cool in a way he like abstracted it. But the guy's like, that's my professor.
Jesus.
I went to school with him. I felt really
Well, I remember in those days, the Shah had police called Savak that were spying on Iranian students here in the U.S.
Right, but that was the Ayatollah. They rounded everybody
up. No, this is after the revolution. Yeah, right.
They rounded everybody up, all the college professors and students. They rounded everyone up and shot them.
Yeah.
And that's what that photo is of. So it actually had nothing to do with Africa Corps.
Except maybe they got some deserts in Africa Corps.
I think they were just trying to be abstract and, you know, trying to make things like not a specific thing. And
I remember a picture in Rolling Stone magazine of the Rolling Stones in Nazi uniforms. There's some weird attraction to that
time,
stuff.
I
don't understand it, you know.
Well, Susie's, you know, the Banshees.
Yeah, yeah.
For some reason,
yeah.
They were just trying to piss off the old generation. They thought, because everyone was traumatized from World War II.
Oh, okay.
So whatever. That was then, but I don't know now. Nowadays, why you were, because Bruce just released an Africa Corps, one of their first recordings, you know, at the Whiskey.
Yeah.
But it's like, change it to Savage Republic. It's like, he just put out an Africa Corps CD. It's like all over the world on the internet.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Why would you want to call yourself Africa?
Yeah, I would not want to call myself. And I did ask you the question, if you listened to the episode, and he was kind of like, yeah, what, whoops. Okay, we're at the end of the second hour, December 11, 2022, Dish Watt Peterson, so special guest Ethan Port. Hold tight for hour three. December 11, 2022. It's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro show. Walk for Pedro show. Start off the third hour with Savage Republic doing the Arab Spring. Then Gebedine with Smoke. Gebedine is a new project from Mike Patton, who played bass in the Middle Class. He lives in Athens, Georgia now. He came to my gig in Atlanta. I said, wow. He used to run the buses in Orange County. And then he retired, and now he lives out there, and he started a new band. And then Siam, Savage Republic. So what was the first gig you played with Savage Republic?
So Greg and I got asked to join in 84, and then Tom Furman, we all met at Bruce's. And so it was right around that time. We recorded Trudge, and the song Trudge is the first song we recorded. That was December 22nd. 1984. But that's like right around the time we joined up. And then from 85 to 88, we were playing all the time.
Okay.
Yeah, so they did this big multi-month tour of Europe, and I was in graduate school, so I had to go back and take my qualifying exams. We tried to make the tour during the summer, but, you know, you can't really tour as easily.
Because they got festivals in summer, so Europe.
Right, and everyone's on vacation and, yeah. You know, whatever. So it got pushed forward. So I missed most of that tour, but that's when they recorded Customs in Greece. But I think it got kind of contentious. And basically, like, Greg and Tom and I, we wanted to keep the band going more in a rock direction, you know, and hard edge. Mm-hmm. And Bruce wanted to do more just, like, cinematic music, which, you know, we weren't opposed to doing soundtracks, but we wanted also to be political, right? We wanted to have songs and
lyrics.
Energy. Yeah, so I don't know. But I wasn't there on the tour, but I think that was kind of a disaster, too, in some ways, like, with people fighting with each other. So,
but you came back and you keep the band going, though, right?
Well, no. So we basically, like, so Greg and Tom and I tried playing together, trying to do something else, but things were kind of a mess, and I was graduating, so then I left town. I was living in Missouri for 2 years, and then I moved up to San Francisco, so we were kind of splintered. And so we didn't do anything until I was in the World Trade Center on 9/11. And that was kind of like a wake-up call, like, oh, life is short. And we decided to do a reunion because Bruce wanted to reissue the CDs.
Yeah.
So we did the box set. So I paid for all that for the box set. And so the other thing that happened right after Savage Republic broke up is all the distributors went out of business because there was that recession.
I remember.
In the 90s. So it was a double punch, right? So we stopped doing things, and then also nothing was selling. We just became, like, obscure and unknown.
Yeah.
So then we came back in 2002 and did this reunion. We did the five shows, and Bruce didn't want to continue with that. But then Tom and I and Greg, we decided we wanted to keep going. And we talked to Bruce. He gave us his blessing.
But he quits his own band. Okay.
Right, and Bruce was like, you know, Bruce was kind of, to us, by that time, he was kind of the leader of the band because we weren't in the original
incarnation. Sure. And so, I think he's the only guy left by that time, right?
Mark was, like, not doing well, so we replaced him with Brad, and then Brad quit. Brad quit when we got back from Europe, so that was another thing. So Brad quit, so we didn't have a drummer. So then we did these final shows, and we got Aaron Shear, amazing drummer, to do those couple of gigs in 89. That was it. But then we wanted to keep going, so then Greg and I and Tom put it back together, and then Tom was able to get his friend Alan Waddington, who's just this amazing killer drummer. And that's been, and then we got Greg wasn't able to tour very much with us, so we got Kerry Dowling, and that's been the band for the last, like, 13 years, I think. Like, it's been really stable, that this four lineup. So of all the new songs you played, that's the four of us. That's Savage Republic probably for forever.
Okay, what's Death Ride 69?
Death Ride 69 was Linda LeSabre, and there was a guy, Don Diego. They're from Washington, D.C. area, and then they moved out to L.A., and they did this record called Elvis Christ. And then Don was kind of a mess, so that band broke up right around the time Savage Republic broke up. I met them before Savage Republic split, but they were just kind of cool and tribal, so Linda asked me to play with them, and she got a new bass player, so we were a three-piece. We played through 89, and it got pretty popular in L.A. We were playing some big shows, we'd always have Day Glow and weird dancers and like make the shows kind of more events.
Right. And, well, you gave me this two mescalita I want to play right now.
Thank you.
Off for Pedro show. Last music for this edition. Start off that chunk of music with Mescalita from Death Ride 69. The Hammered Holes. We had Alec Mackay on last week. Put Mark Cisneros on the drums. Pilot Light. Fine after that with Paint Me Nice. I just love that title. The Norton Variations, number 3 for alto clarinet soprano sax from If Bawana, Al Margolis, Chester, New York. And finally, what turns out to be the third Death Ride 69 tune you gave me, Red Sea. So, off air, I got hip to the fact that they scissored Ethan, but then they broke up. So, see karma whales, people. So what's going on right now with you musically, Ethan?
Right now, there's a lot going on because Savage Republic is just like, we've got like our third wind or something.
Great.
That record, Meteora, that we just put out, we recorded, so we were able to get access to the secret recording location. That's just gigantic performance space during COVID. And we just used the sound of that space, like kind of inspired us, and we kind of caught like lightning in a bottle. We put those songs together really fast, and it was kind of like energized us. So we're going to record another record in Poland during our tour coming up in January. And just things are good. We've been playing together so long together, we just kind of know each other's style, so we don't have to work that hard. We've got all the songs down. And we've got,
last hour, we played this Skand Hass 23.
Skandas 23.
Skandas 23. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is Dryan Zvonzig.
That's a project of some guys that live near me in El Cerrito.
Oh, okay, so it's not your project. You're helping somebody else out. Okay.
It's my project. So it's we have a band called Mosier, which is the street that the community center is on in El Cerrito. We wrote the bass of that song, and then during COVID, you know, we weren't doing shows or anything, so I put this together. So I invited some other people to collaborate.
Yeah.
On it, and there was a benefit for Myanmar for the against the fascists there,
right.
Dictators. So we were raising money for that. My friend asked if I wanted to contribute something, so I wrote the song specifically for that. So the lyrics are all about. I have a friend named Mashane Wynn. She's a poet.
I remember Mashane from the old days. Yes,
yeah,
she's a poet. She lives up in the city now, though. But
she lives 4 blocks from us in El Cerrito. She's like our best friend neighbor. So her partner, Tom Scandura, is the drummer in Mosher. And
oh, wow. Yeah, because, you know, she's on that Turns in Space song on...
that was my first recording.
Feeble.
Right.
Yeah, what's
my
it called? It's called Mighty Feeble.
That's right. Turns in Space.
And it's like you people trying to sleep, you fucking... That it's Helen going up on a loop.
That's right. That's
owner lady.
That's just trying to piss off Helen.
People trying to sleep, man. No, the music that came out.
There's a tape loop of Helen from the Anti Club yelling at us.
Yeah, I know. It's a loop over and over. And then somebody's like hitting the stage with a fucking 2x4 or something.
That's me. Yeah, because I was like, oh,
look. Ma, she was great, man. She's a great lady. She's Burma? Okay. She's great poet.
So Ma wrote a poem that's related to that. So that in the middle of that, Dan's wife is like reading the poem. And then I got my friend, Sophia, who plays in LSD and the Search for God, like a shoegaze band. She did the vocals. And she was like, kind of like upset about the vocals because it wasn't like buried in the mix, like in the shoegaze band. I was like, no, it's got to be up.
Uh-oh.
But I love that song. Yeah.
Yeah. So no, interesting stuff. Where can people find you on the internet?
Bandcamp. So mobilization.bandcamp.com.
Mobilization, people. Is there a mobilization website?
Yeah, there's a mobilization.com, but it's in disrepair.
Okay. Okay, so if you want to get the music, people, go check out mobilization.bandcamp.com.
We got Instagram and Facebook, too. Savage Republic.
All the corporate shit. Official. But, you know, it's good to have your own website. It's like having your own fantasy.
Exactly.
The next thing, the thing that's coming right up is Savage Republic tour in February in Europe.
January, right.
January 2nd, coming right up.
The worst time to tour.
Yeah, heavy weather, so you be careful, okay? But you won't have a lot of competition. That's a good thing. Man, it's been a big honor. Look, you get any more of your stuff music going, like this Sahan 23? Or the new Savage Pub, please come back on the show. We can talk, Ethan.
Excellent. Yeah, thanks, Mike.
Absolutely. Great. Safe seas to you and Bruce, okay?
Uh-huh.
People, it's been the December 11, 2022 edition of Wap Pedro. So keep your powder.